We've got Governor Ned Lamont joining us now. Hey, Governor, welcome back.
Hey, Melissa, it's been a while.
I know. I'm glad to have you here, Governor. I know it's a very, very busy time. We are knee-deep into the legislative session. I know you've been busy, but I appreciate you giving us the time here on WICC. I am going to try to get to as many questions as I can, so bear with me. I appreciate you. Let's start with your budget address. I know there were, I would say, some key things you want to focus on. The most recent right now seems to be your tax proposal that's going on. Talk to us a little bit about it. It sounds like you want another tax cut. I know Republicans would like to see more than a $50 tax cut. But what is sort of the talk a little bit about it, but also what has been the reaction from both sides of the aisle on it?
So pull the lens back for 10 seconds, Melissa. We've had six balanced budgets in a row. We've been able to consistently invest in, education and key services for our people. This next biennium budget, which takes us through fiscal 27, we increase our investments by about $1 billion a year. But included within that balanced budget, we've been able to have another tax cut. The one a couple of years ago was the big one as regards to income tax. Our property tax is probably the tax that is the toughest on people and high relative to our peers. So we continue to increase the property tax credit. It got down as low as $200 per homeowner, and now it's up to about $350. It will be up to $350 if this passes. Just a little more money in your pocket and make life a bit more affordable.
I thought it was really I always think it's very encouraging when you can hear both sides being represented in either a state of the state or a budget address. And I felt that, Governor Lamont. You know, for example, I understand that the fiscal guardrails had to be touched a little bit. They had to be tweaked a little bit. And I know that that was something that Republicans, yourself, the comptroller, were very worried about. But we're still saving an awful lot with the current guardrails in place. But we're addressing something like education that really needs to be looked at. Another thing, when you talk about tax cuts, it sounded like things like cutting licensing fees or reducing filing fees when we're trying to get people back into work and in certain careers like teaching and healthcare and so on. That seemed to be a priority as well, which did come from the Republican side, something that they were looking for. So I did feel there was some compromise. I don't know if you've gotten that reaction from both sides.
I think you're absolutely right, Melissa. We tried to cut those filing fees in the last budget as well. We didn't get it over the finish line. This year, it makes a big difference. Like, I need more nurses. I need more, carpenters, a whole variety of skills. It's sort of a regressive tax to make you pay $200 every 2 years to get relicensed. We're not lowering standards. We're just getting rid of those licensing fees. Makes it a little easier for you to stay in the game.
And again, we have Governor Ned Lamont here. Let's talk about education. That is certainly one of the sectors that we're trying to fill jobs. Obviously, I think we heard from the Connecticut Education Association, one of the biggest unions in Connecticut representing teachers. We've heard from many who are saying, thank God education is being prioritized. It needs to be prioritized, certainly after the pandemic. I'm curious, though, something in there was talking about, and I can't quote it because I don't have it right in front of me, but it was creating some 20,000 new preschool spaces by the year 2032, I believe is what I heard you say. How do we do that when we've been struggling to find quality and accessible just daycare and early childcare centers? It feels like in recent years, how do we create that? Especially then, how do we create the people to actually take on those jobs?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are making the biggest investment in early child care in the history of the state, building on what we've done for the last 3 years. As you point out, Melissa, we'll be, almost doubling the number of spaces, not just pre-K, but also, earlier age as well as that. That includes the paying more for the caregivers, training more caregivers. Some of these daycare slots will maybe be pre-K at the schools. Some will be privately done, as they are right now. But child care is just an incredibly expensive thing for a lot of young parents right now. We're going to make sure that nobody pays anything for parents up to about $100,000 a year in income. Then it slides down from there a bit. We're going to make it more accessible around the state. We have some, daycare, child care deserts like in eastern Connecticut, where we've got to do a better job working with our companies to make sure it allows mom and dad to get back to work as well.
So, Governor Lamont, in your address, you said the capital budget includes $500 million for new schools, the biggest increase, it says, in years. And you mentioned some of the towns that have seen that directly. It says new schools will also include solar panels and insulation to reduce costs, air conditioning and ventilations to keep our kids safe, obviously. When you look at $500 million, I know just here in Milford, just to give you an example, it was going to cost tens of millions of dollars. They're in the midst of trying to figure out what their new school building plan is going to look like. But essentially, almost every school in the Milford School District, and there's over a dozen, have like zero. They need HVAC. They need lots of things. And I'm when you hear $500 million, it sounds like an awful lot. But in the grand scheme of things, I'd imagine a lot of schools. You know, Connecticut being kind of a, I would say, aging architecture sort of a state. A lot of schools need that kind of money. And so, how do you pick and choose who gets a chunk of that $500 million for the new schools or upgrades?
It's quite competitive, Melissa, as you can imagine. It's by far the biggest investment we've made anyway in a new school construction. As you point out, these are modern schools. They're environmentally friendly. We got ventilation, keep everybody awake, and look what happened when we got through COVID. Right now, schools based upon need, based upon overcapacity, based upon you know, how old their infrastructure is, they come through a legislative committee. We get the proposals and decide what our priorities are. But schools just send, look, I used to teach a little bit down at Harding High School down in Bridgeport. It was a crummy looking building when we were there, and it said something to the kids when they walked in. They were going into a crummy looking building. What does that say about how they value us? You know, over the last 10 years, they built a brand new Harding High School down there, and I get to go down there every year or two. And it's just amazing what a new school means in terms of the attitude of these kids. They value us, and we're going to value education.
Well, I mean, in Bridgeport being a great example, I mean, seeing the state, and again, I want to make it very clear that the state is not doing a takeover or anything, but the fact is, I was curious. I know you have a history with teaching in Bridgeport for a stint of time. What do you think about the state stepping in? I think this is the first time Bridgeport's ever had this, but it seems like kind of oversight, if you will, for the Board of Education there, for the teachers training. I mean, this is quite the investment of energy and time and dollars coming from the state specifically to Bridgeport.
Yeah, look, Charlene Russell Tucker, our commissioner, is stepping in with a team in partnership with Bridgeport, help them get back on track. They've had some problems with the board. They keep having a lot of turnover there. The superintendent keeps turning over. So sometimes the answer is not always more money, but better reforms that will make sure we put money into the classroom for the kids, not some overpriced central office.
We have Governor Ned Lamont here, and following up on his recent budget address, we want to talk about some of the items that came up. And something that really struck a chord with me, Governor Lamont, I'd love to dive into this a little bit. Obviously, housing is another thing that has been a priority for many, many years. It continues to be now, understandably so. You know, we talk about, for example, trying to get teachers, law enforcement, healthcare workers, just to name a few of the sectors. It's hard to fill those jobs if we can't even find a place for them to live in and around the cities or towns that they're working in. So this was an interesting stat you said during your speech. Last year, Connecticut built 70% more housing than just 8 years ago. And while that could be true, that must be true, I'm not saying that it's not, I don't see it. And then the reason I say that is not to knock the words you're saying, but I'm seeing complexes popping up. That's true. I see them left and right constantly, especially in places like Norwalk, Stamford, Bridgeport, where we are located. But I'm not seeing where people are not feeling the crunch. The average person my age can start a family here without moving in with their parents for a good 10, 15 years. I'm not seeing where seniors aren't living in and out of their cars because they can't find affordable housing. I'm not seeing where veterans aren't finding, like, I'm not seeing, even though the complexes are popping up, where they're actually affordable and addressing that need. So could you talk a little bit about that? It seems like, yes, we're creating complexes, but I don't see where the average Connecticut resident is actually utilizing that space.
Yeah, fair point. We have a lot of catching up to do. As you point out, we're building more housing today than any time in recent memory because there's a lot of demand there. There's a lot of demand there because a lot of people want to move to Connecticut, and they can't move to Connecticut if they can't find a place to stay. Live. And if they can't find a place to live and they can't move here, that's going to hurt economic growth and opportunity for all of our people. You point out, you know, because of that big demand, the prices, the values of our home have gone up 30 or 40%. Maybe that's good news, but at the same time, it's unaffordable for a lot of our, say, young families and people getting started. We're trying to provide more housing, more studios, more one bedrooms, more places for, you know, single people to go. So we get young people staying in the state and expanding here in the state. And on the homelessness, it's tragic. We're, you know, having a big increase in the amount of support we're giving the homeless population, just because a lot of them are getting pushed out by landlords who say, I can get higher rent from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to protect those people, allow them to stay where they are. And if they do need a roof over their heads, we're making sure they have a home.
Well, and then I guess that kind of leads me to that question then, Governor. Why keep creating complexes that essentially are not answering the question? So, you know, if we're creating these buildings, like I look at, for example, there's this public hearing this week by the Planning and Development Committee, and they're talking about increasing housing development within 1/2 mile of public transit stations, which I understand that was in your address too. We got to make things more walkable. We've got to make things more green. We got to make things more available to people who don't have a car. I'm with you. I got you on that. But here's the thing is, if we're going to develop housing complexes near every train station, bus station, what have you, what's the point if we're not actually going to build up those communities and have them live in those complexes? Because they can't afford it. So it just feels like developers are getting rich, or out-of-staters who can afford to live here are finding places. But we're really not helping Connecticut residents overall.
I think adding more types of housing, it could be affordable housing, housing with wraparound services for folks with disabilities. It could be workforce housing, studios for young people. All that increase in supply tends to hold down price and makes housing a little more affordable. Right now, where we don't have enough supply and demand is very strong, that drives up the price of housing. That's good if you're already a homeowner. That's tough if you're trying to buy a home. So be it next to a train station, be it next to a bus stop, all ways that make our urban downtowns a lot more livable, I think makes good sense.
I mean, and I agree, but it doesn't seem like a lot of, if not the majority of those units in these complexes are actually affordable. I mean, it at least that's what I'm hearing from a lot of my listeners. I mean, I have seniors, I have veterans, I have people my age in their 30s and 40s. I mean, no one is and I've heard so many people who have debated coming or staying in Connecticut, but not because that there just aren't housing options, even though I'll say, hey, this complex is popping up here, or hey, this just opened here. Just here in Milford, we had a place across the street. I had a senior in Easton, just to give you an example, who is living out of his car right now. Because, like you had mentioned, his landlord is using that property for something else. He had X amount of days to move somewhere. And I said, well, they just opened this senior housing right here in Milford. You should put an application in, yada, yada, yada. A, it's not affordable. B, it's so competitive. And so we've got a guy who's living out of his car right now in Easton, Connecticut with his disability pets. And I think to myself, this is a reality in Connecticut, which has been continuously one of the richest states in the country. And it's abnormal to me. It's bizarre to me.
Well, nobody should be living out of their car, especially a senior. We've got the, you know, warming shelters. We have homeless shelters. We got places to get people in a safe environment, especially on a really cold day in February. Look, when we build housing, a lot of it, you know, 10, 20, 30% is affordable, quote unquote, which is like 70% of median income in that particular town. So it's obviously a lot more affordable, is a lot more expensive in Greenwich than it is in Hartford. That's just the nature of the beast. But also just more different types of housing, I think, is going to make it a lot more accessible to more young people.
And Governor Lamont, I know I could talk to you for hours and hours, but as I mentioned, I know you're very busy and the show only goes till 10 o'clock. This was one more question I did have for you, because I thought it was kind of surprising. I had talked to Comptroller Sean Scanlon when this report first came out at the end of last year, and it was looking at CSCU spending. And I actually asked Sean directly. I said, do you think Terrence Chang, the chancellor for CSCU, should remain in place after we learned it was very clear that dollars were being misused? And it wasn't just, I want to make it clear, it wasn't just Chancellor Chang. It was a systematic issue. This has been misused for a long time throughout the CSCU system. But it was interesting because a report out of Hearst Media sort of seemed like you kind of were like writing it off, like, we know, but I don't know if he needs to lose his job over it. And I was curious if you could comment on that, because I don't know if it sat well with a lot of people.
Look, Hearst took half the quote. I said look, this is obviously a colossal error of judgment. It sends the wrong signal when you spend too much on a meal, when you use a car service, when you can drive, especially in a time when we're in a tight budget. I just think it's incredibly tone deaf. When it comes to high crimes and misdemeanors, you know, I care much more about the direction of the CSU system, in particular our community colleges. So what for me is big potatoes is making sure we get the strategy right, because, Melissa, you know, while our population at the CSU system is up 6.2% over the last year, that's good. We're still way below capacity, especially our community colleges are not working on all eight cylinders, to use an old analogy, 30% fewer students there than, say, 10, 20 years ago. I need to make the strategic changes to make sure it's working for people, especially our community colleges. That's an escalator of opportunity. That trains people for the jobs that are out there. And I'm not sure it's working yet.
You know, and this is why I always tout the fact that you have to go directly to sources. And I say that because Governor Lamont, when I read that article, I felt like it was kind of, I'm not going to knock anybody, but incomplete. Because if I've gotten to know you over the years, the thing that I know about you is that you are a businessman first. And to me, what I took away from it was, okay, you could remove, you know, Chang if you want to, but at the end of the day, we've got a systematic issue here that needs to be addressed. And one person may set a precedent, but to me, this was a much deeper problem that needs to be addressed from the inside out. And so that's what I sort of took away. But, you know, I appreciate you addressing it here on the air and clarifying what you really meant in and just talking to us in general here on WICC. We always appreciate it, Governor.
Well said, Melissa. Thank you.
All right. Governor Lamont right here on WICC.